Good morning. I'm Tommy Helm, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International from the studios of KBZT FM 94.9 in San Diego. Tree Huggers International is a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program dedicated to the preservation of parks, wilderness, and special places, from the beaches to the mountains to the deserts. This is Tree Huggers International. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. On December 18th, 2008, conservationists and those who had been fighting to keep trestles and San Onofre State Beach free of a toll road finally got the word. Trestles had been saved. The culmination of years of efforts by a multitude of organizations, that moment marked a major milestone in Southern California conservation. San Onofre State Beach, the San Mateo Campground, San Mateo Creek, and the San Onofre Backcountry were to remain protected, as was intended when the lands were first set aside as a state park in 1971. After months of deliberating, the Transportation Corridor Agency's appeal of the February 2008 California Coastal Commission decision to deny the Orange County TCA a permit to build the southern extension of the Foothill South 241 toll road through San Onofre, the outgoing Secretary of Commerce in the Bush administration, Carlos Gutierrez, found reasonable alternatives to the toll road proposed by the TCA still exist, and that the toll road was not necessarily in the interest of national security. Trestles was saved. Sometimes it feels almost too good to be true. The Orange County Transportation Corridor Agency may yet eventually try to sue to continue pushing their road, but it's safe to say the tide has turned against them. So joining us today on Tree Huggers International is retired California State Parks Ranger Steve Long, who now serves as the senior advisor to the nonprofit San Onofre Foundation. For years, Steve served as the supervising lifeguard of San Clemente State Beach and the visitor services chief of the southern sector of California State Park's Orange Coast District, and spent the better part of his career directly overseeing San Onofre. Steve is also the father of surfers Rusty and Greg Long, and while he still spends a great deal of time in Southern California, he and his wife now live in Oregon. But Steve is with us today to talk about his time at San Onofre, the history of the battles between toll road developers and state parks, and the newly established San Onofre Foundation, intended to lend a hand to San Onofre State Beach and other regional state parks. Steve, thank you for your ongoing service to this state, and welcome to Tree Huggers International. It is a privilege having you here today.
Well, thanks, Tommy. It's great to be here.
Now, you are splitting your time between Southern California and Oregon these days. Can you talk a little bit about that? How did you wind up spending some time in Oregon?
Well, I had to make a retirement decision sometime back, and my wife and I had been looking around the state of California and decided to look a little bit further. Had family up in the Pacific Northwest and a long history, and we were up there on a summer holiday and taking a real serious look around, and we fell in love with the little community of Sisters, which is on the east side of the Cascades, just north of Bend. So made a decision and settled in up there in Sisters. And fortunately, we have such strong family connections down here that we're making the journey down as often as we can. And with my involvement with the foundation and the parks, I hope to continue doing that. Plus, the water's a little warmer down here for the surf.
Now, you're from Colorado originally. How did you wind up in California?
Military family. We moved around quite a bit. Actually born in Monterey, California. And my dad bounced around, as a military does. And we spent about 6 years in Colorado. So I got acclimated to the cold weather. And the east side of the Cascades, very similar to where I lived in Colorado Springs. But actually, since 1960, we've been here in Southern California. I grew up around Anaheim, went to school in the little town of Placentia. Was Orange Groves when I moved there. But.
Well, and of course, when San Onofre State Beach was established, you'd already been going there, and you were familiar with the area before it became a state park.
That's true. Like many people in the 60s, the surfing craze hit, and being a passionate water sort of a person, swimmer and the likes, found my way to the beach, took up surfing, and migrated down to Doheny, San Onofre, and actually used to park along the side of old Highway 101 in the area that's now the Bluffs or Trails campground, and surfed down there in the mid to late 60s before it was a park. And then 72, when it became a park and opened up all the access to the trestles, I'd been sneaking in like everybody else, but the floodgates were opened. And 74 is when I went to work for state parks, and eventually 78 moved on down there as the lifeguard chief.
Was Doheny also protected as a park by the time San Onofre came under the State Parks Department?
Doheny and San Clemente State Beach were the two of the first coastal acquisitions in 1931, and those campgrounds were developed in 1933 by the Civilian Conservation Corps during the Great Depression. That was the big public works project. So they're the two original coastal campgrounds in California. Great long vision the state of California had at that time to set that parkland aside. San Onofre, again, came along in 71, 72. There had been earlier discussion all the way back into the 60s about acquiring that property from the Marine Corps, but it took until about 71 for it to come to pass. All of San Onofre State Beach is on land that is owned or controlled by the Department of the Navy, Camp Pendleton Marine Corps Base. Initially, there were over 2,000 acres carved out on a lease arrangement. The presumed intent of Richard Nixon, who was actually lobbied by his wife, Pat Nixon, to open that land up to the public. She saw the surfers going down there and had become aware that it was such a magnificent surf zone. She lobbied her husband, and he had the authority, and I say by presidential decree, he ordered the Department of the Navy to lease property to the state of California. So we have a 50-year lease that expires in 2021, and it's a point of contention. The TCA argues that, well, it's leased land, and State Parks really has no general authority here. They're tenants, and the Department of the Navy is the supreme power there. I like to argue that the Department of the Navy reports to the citizens of the United States, and in fact, the Department of the Navy and the Marine Corps hold that land in trust for us. The ideal situation would be ultimately for that land to be deeded to the state of California, and we don't have to work through a lease arrangement. It makes things very complicated and has complicated our situation regarding the toll road. When they established their Western White House there in the old Hamilton Cotton Estate, it's a beautiful Spanish tile, the architecture, we call it the Ole Hansen. He was the founder of San Clemente. The estate had been built on the south end of San Clemente, and it had housed racehorses and had its own racetrack and was quite a setup. And it had fallen in disrepair, several owners. Richard Nixon took custody of it, developed it as his vacation Western White House. And whenever he was there, the security would be very tight. They would have U.S. Marshals standing on the beach, a Coast Guard cutter right in the water directly opposite the Western White House, which happens to be the Break Cottons. The surfers who were routinely sneaking into trestles either had walked down the beach from San Clemente, or they would park off the side of the old highway and run through the jungle. They had played that cat and mouse game with the Marines. Now, suddenly with the president there, the amount of security was increased, so it really restricted access into that wave-rich zone. And the mile and a half of beach that we call trestles is truly the most consistent year-round surf break in all of California, if not the North American continent. It catches both the winter and summer swells. It tends to be a little glassier depending on the kelp beds and how much protection they're providing, but exceptional quality surf. And Pat Nixon was the one, the president's wife, who became aware that the public had this desire to recreate there, and their presence was having an impact on that. So again, she lobbied that should become a state park, and at least when it did, the public now had access to the trestles. They would still have restricted access at Cottons while he was president. After he was no longer president, then it was no longer an issue. They still had tremendous amount of Secret Service and security around the place, but Richard Nixon himself was not an avid beachgoer. There's stories of him being tumbled over on one occasion in the shore break at Cotton's, and that was the last time he decided to go down on the beach. We do have pictures of him walking in his wingtips, along with different dignitaries, but more his family were the beachgoers, and we have them to thank, and then Ronald Reagan as well, who was governor, and in tandem, they both declared that this land should be held for our children, and it's an example of our heritage. And as such, it's rather tragic that we're now looking at paving it over.
The San Mateo campground, that was established as part for mitigation for the nuclear plant, correct?
That's correct. Surprisingly, something on the scale of a nuclear plant, there were some permitting issues. They had neglected, apparently, to have authorization from State Lands Commission. As such, there was a lawsuit that challenged how did this get built without the necessary one very critical permit. And they were required to put money in an escrow account pending the outcome of the lawsuit, which they eventually lost. The money was used to compensate the citizens of California for their lost access and the violation apparently of this permitting process. So that money allowed us to build a campground. The general plan, and every state park has a general plan, included a total of three campgrounds: the Bluff Campground, or Trails as the surfers like to refer to it, and then two campgrounds in the inland portion. The San Mateo Campground would probably never have been funded without this mitigation money. Just simply the economy of California, there have not been new campgrounds built. We're about to see the very first coastal campground built at Crystal Cove in over 30 years. So Edison, through their oversight or whatever, however you want to describe it, actually really has made a significant contribution to the people of California by funding a campground. And there was, in the general plan, an additional equestrian campground and environmental campsites planned for the inland portions of San Onofre. We may never see those. However, that backcountry is incredibly in demand for recreation. It's extremely popular with mountain bikes, and I'm letting a secret out here to all the mountain bike folks that it has outstanding trails and is a well-used, underutilized area.
When did you first become aware that there were plans afoot to potentially put a toll road or a freeway through the San Mateo backcountry?
I became aware of it, I would say, probably right at about 1981, 1982, we were in the initial phases of our general plan process at San Onofre, and our general plan does discuss, it was issued in 1985, either late 84 or 85, the fact that Orange County had begun this initiative of building toll roads as their next transportation solution, and a far distant component of it could include a road coming through the park at San Onofre. And there was very slight mention of it. Again, we, in our general plan, had intentions that the public should have access to that back area. So there was no detail in terms of what this road would look like. And I think perhaps State Park's hope was that it would be built with a sensitive eye to the park and infrastructure that could be compatible. State Parks doesn't necessarily have a problem with infrastructure. We pride ourselves in telling the story of the people of California and our history and the development of California. And parks themselves are infrastructure. They're facilities and roads and the likes of that. There are ways to meet our needs yet remain sensitive to the environment and to the heritage, and particularly the fact that this is a sacred land to the Ahashiman, the first people, and really should be considered sacred land to all of us. It's the last remaining example of a coastal valley and a terrace and the surf breaks that we have.
Thank you. Thank you, and good afternoon.
You can mitigate water quality, or you might think you're mitigating it, or you'll attempt, or you might mitigate a toad or a mouse or a bird, but you cannot mitigate an experience. And that is the sacred element of our parks. They're places that we go for respite, to be recreated. That's what recreation is, to be renewed. And they're places of the spirit and the soul. When you walk down the path to have the trestles experience, you're walking through sycamore groves and willows. You're hearing birds. You may see bobcats. There are weasels out there. People don't realize that. The mountain lion wanders through. It's much the same as the first people experienced 4,000 years ago when they came into that valley. The surfers, as they come down, or the birders, or the fishermen, or the bicyclists, the road bikes that go through there, it's nearly a million riders a year that are recreating coming through the park. The experience they have as they leave San Clemente is part of what they're coming there for. It's that renewal. They're suddenly out in nature, in this natural environment.
If you're just joining us, this is Tree Huggers International, broadcast from the studios of KBZT, FM 94.9 in San Diego. I'm Tommy Helm, and joining us today is Steve Long, retired California State Park Ranger, surfer, and senior advisor to the San Onofre Foundation. And we're talking about all of the maneuvering behind the plan to build a toll road through San Onofre State Beach. Steve, what was always your best argument to the TCA and other entities for not building a road through San Onofre?
I am fond of saying that threats to the integrity and existence of San Onofre must be defended through a unity of rational, contemporary, intellectual dialogue. The public, the stakeholders, the 2.5 million visitors to San Onofre State Beach have truly never had their voice heard until the Coastal Commission hearing. Earlier at the State Parks and Recreation Commission hearing was the first time there was an opportunity for the public to speak. Over 1,000 attended that, 3,500 the Coastal Commission hearing, another 2,000 at the Commerce hearings. While TCA would argue that, well, we had public hearings, they were often in city council chambers in places like Orange and the likes of that, and only the most in tune folks, and they were there from the beginning, were standing up and saying, hey, wait a second, let's discuss alternatives. TCA has a single purpose, which is to develop toll roads. They don't do regional transportation. Instead of arterials, which is what South County really needs, that and a fix on I-5, and I may as well discuss that, there's a non-compete clause between Caltrans and the TCA such that Caltrans cannot even address widening Interstate 5 through San Clemente until 2012, when that clause ceases to have power. Caltrans owns or controls about 90% of the right-of-way through San Clemente. And next time you drive through it, take a look. There's room there to add an additional 3 to 4 lanes without taking the 300 to 400 homes that have been described by TCA. What they do, they kind of hedge their discussion when they're talking about this massive take of homes and businesses. That would be if there was a widening of Interstate 5 all the way up through the Mission Viejo corridor. The impacts in San Clemente of widening would be very, very minimal. So again, it's how you tweak the rhetoric. But back to alternative solutions. Yes, widening I-5, slowing the traffic down as it approaches the city of San Clemente. The city of San Clemente definitely needs another outlet. They went full speed ahead in terms of permitting development based on the assumption that there would be a toll road and a southbound exit out of the backcountry. There is a road called La Pata that needs to be connected to San Antonio Parkway. Pico could be connected to Christianitas Road to give that back access for the folks out of Talega to get down to the Interstate 5. And perhaps, and most people aren't aware of this, Christianitas Road goes all the way through the Don O'Neill Conservancy out to the Ortega Highway. It's a two-lane road, and at grade, it probably could be enhanced to a four-lane road and done with less impact than certainly the toll road route that they've proposed through the Don O'Neill property. I'm not advocating for that, but I am saying there are alternatives. It creates a big contract, which in the end, this is all about big money contracts. I believe the governor supports it because he sees that his state of California needs big business and the engine to drive the economy, and building highways meets that need. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to speak to him when he came on the tour. They told me to stay well away and don't even attempt to speak to him. I would have suggested to him that, gosh, there are some alternatives that you need to look at. Again, I don't know if it was by design or intent, but the business plan of TCA really dismissed the fact that there are stakeholders that are passionate. They really underestimated that the surfers would ever mobilize, and really who would have ever thought that the surfers would be the catalyst that would bring together this very diverse group of folks that are speaking out. It's not just about saving trestles or the surf, it's about saving our park. The State Parks Foundation, the Sierra Club, Friends of the Foothills, Surf Rider Foundation, thank goodness they all came together as a united voice. But really, it was oversight in terms of a business plan. Whoever created the business plan dismissed everybody.
You mentioned when the governor was around, you were asked not to speak with him. Were you asked not to speak with the governor because you might ask him or tell him something he didn't want to hear?
We, in fact, and I can say this now because I'm no longer employed by State Parks, but we had been muzzled actually for quite some time, dating all the way back into the 90s, but most aggressively in the last 4 years. Yes, I was a driver and an escort. That tour was so loaded with lobbyists for TCA and those folks that I would not have had any opportunity to engage in real conversation, and I was just simply given the instruction, it would be best if you don't even try. We don't need to create any type of an issue that will potentially cause embarrassment to the department or to the director of the department, who is a political appointee. Starting at the director's level on down, the word was passed, you can speak to the potential impacts, but you're not to speak to alternatives or give opinions. And as such, I'm the longest tenured employee that worked at San Onofre as a permanent employee. I watched the place be developed and built and in the management plans. We're charged with protecting and preserving state parks, yet we were basically told, do not do your job in that regard. So I really don't think that would have been the ideal situation. I had Bobby Shriver I give tours of the backcountry of the park to show people, here's what's being impacted and let's talk about alternatives. And he asked me, he said, well, why didn't you tell my brother-in-law what you're telling me? And I said, well, I would love to, but he had so many handlers around him and then a ring of folks from TCA, we weren't able to have any dialogue with him. He did say, gosh, I'd love to bring my family and camp here sometime. And we took him to the point overlooking trestles, and he was delighted to see the surfers, and he could see why it was such a popular zone. But again, he had other people in his ear, so missed that opportunity.
Did Governor Davis or previous governors ever do any sort of fact-finding trips, even just cursory trips, just to go see the place when this was first discussed?
This really began gaining traction during the Wilson administration, very, very pro-construction and business. And in fact, State Parks at that time was told to prepare the mitigation plan. And I have seen the mitigation plan, which basically said we are going to walk away from everything east of Interstate 5, which would be the San Mateo campground and a little over 1,000 acres. That it's a gem. It is being used by hikers, joggers, bikers, extreme marathoners love to train back there. And if we had the resources to develop it a little bit further, once people saw it, they would come. They are coming already, even without the infrastructure. But then during the Davis administration, there already was a package in place that was prepared during the Wilson administration that simply said state parks will walk away from this. And a very bad precedent, never saw any light of day, but I've seen the documents, and I wanted to speak up. I tried to insert myself several times into conversations regarding what was being proposed and wanted to very clearly state this is wrong. And park management at the time also felt that this is very wrong, but they were basically given orders to prepare to give up on this. We need to have this be a watershed moment, a symbol for modern civilization working to strike a balance. Let's preserve and enhance our sacred sense of place and then manage the needs of our community. There's still an opportunity, and San Onofre, I guess, has become the symbol or the battleground, if you will, in this test of, you know, where are we going to take our civilization on planet Earth. I'd sure like my grandson to be able to come down here and go surfing and have the same experience that I've had. So I've been fortunate to have had this wonderful career, worked in this spectacular place, seen so many millions of people get that sense of joy and renewal.
Well, the foundation, you know, a large component of that is, of course, to maintain San Onofre State Beach as it was intended, but it also needs a little bit of TLC. The park could use some brushing up in places. That's something else the San Onofre Foundation was also able to tackle, correct?
Truly. And the San Onofre Foundation is organized as a nonprofit public benefit corporation. It is not a political advocacy group. And as such, we will do very little other than to keep asking for rational contemporary dialogue. The true purpose, again, of the foundation is to create a vision for San Onofre, to assist California State Parks in their education and interpretive endeavors. We all know the state of California is financially strapped, has been for years. State Parks is one of the first things to feel the impact. We're only 0.1% of the state general fund, and I can tell you we're operating at probably about 30% of the level that we should be in terms of service and maintenance. We have over $1 billion in backlog deferred maintenance throughout the park system. So these nonprofits are called cooperating associations, come into existence at specific parks to raise funds and raise awareness, to do specific things in the park that the state will never get to. And we really want San Onofre, the fifth most popular park in California, to be treated like a serious park. When you come in, there are educational panels that tell you the many stories, such wonderful and rich history there, that that's one of the first and easy endeavors for the foundation. Our very major campaign is to build a safe railroad crossing for all the surfers that are crossing the tracks that go to Lower Trestles. They walk down a dirt trail that technically is closed. There's a sign that says beach, go that way, and you're supposed to walk around and go underneath the trestle at church. But the trail leads down to a situation where people are trespassing up and over the track, and then they'll go through the marsh during dry seasons, and they create these trails, which is damaging to the marsh. Yeah, the marsh recovers when it gets wet again, but we'd like to build a safe railroad crossing and an environmentally sensitive raised boardwalk that will allow surfers and, well, everyone, it will be ADA accessible, allow everyone access out to this unique area. Our parks give us a sense of place and history, and the information on Sano Foundation, sanofoundation.org, we are looking for supporters, obviously volunteers. We plan on doing several events. Got to change that concept that it's only the surf. Sano is so many things to so many people.
SanoFoundation.org.
Correct.
SanoFoundation.org.
Thanks for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the park.
And thanks for making time for Tree Huggers International, Steve. And again, thank you for your ongoing service to state parks and conservation overall in Southern California.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. Many thanks again to retired California State Parks Ranger, surfer, and Senior Advisor to the San Onofre Foundation, Steve Long. If you want more information on the San Onofre Foundation, go to their website at www.sanofoundation.org. That's www.sanofoundation.org. The opinions and views expressed on Tree Huggers International do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of FM 94.9 or Lincoln Financial Media. And for more information on Tree Huggers International and to hear previous editions of the show, go to the Tree Huggers International website at treehuggersintl.com. That's treehuggersintl.com. You can also access the Tree Huggers International page via the FM 94.9 website at www.fm949sd.com. Also, find Tree Huggers International on Twitter and Facebook, and our Twitter address is at treehuggersintl. Tree Huggers International content is now also available on iTunes. We'll be back same time next Sunday morning with another take on natural science and environmental affairs as we continue our mission to preserve parks, wilderness, and special places on Tree Huggers International. Thanks for making us a part of your Sunday morning, and enjoy the rest of your weekend. Be well.